anything good for the body other than silence. It is not the, how does he translate it? It's that study, the practice, which is the main thing. And the more you talk, the more sin you bring about. Okay? So Shimon Bono says, all my days I grew up among the wise. I didn't find anything as good as silence. Now, do you see silence as something that is associated with the body or with the soul? But
the mouth.
The mouth, right? But with speech, something that you associate with the body or with the soul? It's like the difference between man and animal is that man's got a soul, and therefore man can speak. Right? Speech is really the communication of the soul, not the communication of the body. It's the communication of the soul, which is why animals don't have a soul. And not coincidentally, animals don't speak. Now, they can communicate whatever their instinct is that it goes wrong together for communication, but that's not speech, right? So Sherman says that the best thing for the body is speech. It's very strange. You would expect it to be, for my soul, because if I speak, then I'm going to speak Russian horror, and that's bad for my soul, and I'm going to insult people, that's bad for my soul, and then I'll curse, and that's bad for my soul. A lot of things you do with your mouth which are inappropriate. And look at the expression. He doesn't say, "Below matzazi la neshama tov elashtika." He doesn't say that the best thing for the neshama is silence. He says the best thing for the goof is silence. So I would use as a pretty peculiar that's a peculiar way of putting it, isn't it? Right? So the commentators explain that of course it's good for the soul. Of course it's good for the soul. So he's emphasizing it's also good for the body. Right? It's also good. The best thing for the body is silence. It's a lot of illness, ailments, suffering comes from talking too much. Right? It's one of the best and the best policies you can adopt in life. It's like we were speaking yesterday. I just saw recently this week somebody came to one of the Gedolim, and he was a wealthy man who decided he wants to push a political agenda. So he approached one of the Gedolim and he suggested he'll donate a lot of money if the religious people will approach the political situation a certain way. And he approached one of the Gedolim, and so all the Gedolim said to us, I hear. Didn't say yes, he didn't say no. You got to learn in life what happens is people, somebody challenges you and people panic. Well, are you going to be doing it or not going to be doing it? And people always feel they got to give an answer, right? One of the best things, one of the most important expressions you can learn in life is to say something either like, I hear, or you may have a point there. That's absolutely non-committal. You may have a point there. Guy comes and says, I think that you may have a point there. You may not. Right? You may be talking total rubbish, right? Yeah. But you may have a point there. People are having I found one of the best lines is that, well, it's in my best interest not to discuss it.
So this is not supposed to be a sort of monastic approach of withdrawing from society. This is how to conduct yourself in society.
We are not withdrawers, right? That's why he even says, I grew up among the wise. He doesn't say I grew up as a hermit on a mountain. He says, I grew up among the wise, and I found, particularly among wise people, just nobody, you should know, by the way, again, your first name is?
Richard.
Very few people in life object to you being silent. Right, most people would like to hear themselves talk, and a lot. Right, and very few people will object to you being in a room. That's that there's an art to listening actively. Never see people come in and are good listeners. They move their eyebrow, like that, like they're with you. And then people at the end, I guess he says in How to Win Friends and Influence People, he talks about how guy can sit there and talk to you for 45 minutes. You've said basically three words, and then at the end of the day, he walks away and says, "Wow, that was really nice talking to you." Right? It wasn't. You were listening to him talk about himself, right? And the guy feels, it was really nice talking to you. What's that?
Carnegie
killed himself. Yeah, he committed suicide. Right? At the end of the day, How to Win Friends and Influence People. Dale Carnegie wrote one of the most famous books in history, How to Win Friends and Influence People. It is basically a Torah hashkafa from a secular perspective of good midos. Right? You're going to have good friends. If you have good midos, you're going to have good friends. There's only one thing that makes it, if you look at the back flap, The Gemara says, how can you get ahead? How can you succeed? How can you do that? How can the whole book is about you? But, you know, in other words, have good meals, behave nicely, because it'll be good for you to do so. And what can you gain out of it? Right? That's where we part company. Because you know, you're not going to find that in the Mesillas Yesharim. The Mesillas Yesharim doesn't say at the end of the guy, at the end of the path of the just, it doesn't say, and by the way, when you perfect your character, you'll be the head honcho. Right? Yeah, it doesn't say that anywhere. The whole book, the underlying theme of the book is what's in it for you. It's worth being nice because you're going to gain something from it. Right? So yeah, what you say is very important. We're not looking to be hermits. We're not looking to be hermits, right? But even when you're around people, it is very important. You know, there's a statement that Gemara says, "Ma umanuso shel adam ba'olam hazeh." What is a person's profession that he should strive for in this world? Yase atzmo ki'ilein. Try to turn yourself into a mute. Try to turn yourself into. You have to actively. You have to have professional control over your mouth. The most difficult thing in the world is to be silent, and most people are more than happy to conduct a conversation with you where you're doing less of the talking. Right? And therefore, Rav Shubingel says, first of all, when you're around the wise people, the best thing for you around wise people is to be silent. Because the more silent you are, the more you can hear what they have to say. When you're around wise people, then you get to hear what they have to say. A fool is compared to a coin in a jar. A wise man is compared to a jar that's stuffed full of coins. What's the difference between them? When there's one coin in a jar, make a lot of noise. Right? And the jar stuffed with coins doesn't make any noise at all. Right? Where the one coin goes jingling around a whole lot. There's some people who, you know, just got to hear themselves talk and they got to hear what they have to say. It's like a coin in the jar. Right? The other people, I got nothing to prove to anybody. I don't have to talk at all. You know, you're stuffed full of coins. Right? So he says the best thing fighting for a goof is silence. Person talks, you get yourself into trouble, you tell people your plans. Somebody's your plans don't work out, now you gotta explain why they didn't work out, you got why I'm planning on doing this, and we're gonna be doing that, we're gonna be doing this. You have people that kishkas are all over the place. And at the end of the day, you get a lot of aggravation for it. The best thing in life is the less you talk, the better off you are. The less you talk, the rule in life. The less you talk, like somebody once said, nobody ever regretted something they didn't say. Right? People always regret, ooh, I wish I could have had that big. Nobody ever said, ooh, and it's true. Some, once in a while you should have said something and you didn't. Right? Once in a while. But for the most part you're better off. If you have to pick one policy over the other one. Yeah. On the other hand, like Richard says, that we're not trying to be hermits. We are meant to be social beings.
But how about the people who they don't talk much? They're very secretive, right? They don't discuss, like you discuss something with them, they don't discuss their plan, like a good friend. So, but I feel a lot of time, it brings a lot of,
I have that right. I don't, there's no benefit. It doesn't bring hatred. You feel like, how come you're not sharing with me?
Right.
Well, that's my personality. You want, that we got enough things we could talk about and do, and I need to talk about my private life. I don't want to talk about myself. My policy. That's what we're going to be friends.
But people don't respect that.
Okay, then you can be friends with somebody else. Again, we're making it. We're trying to impose. I have a right. Look, every relationship, there's a two. You know, so you're right. It's impolite to not say anything about yourself. You're allowed to say, you know, where are you from? You know, if you're there, where are you from? Yeah, you're right. Yeah, but I don't want to discuss my business. I could say what I do as a job. I don't want to discuss my plans. I don't want to discuss my investments. I have that right. And if somebody feels that that's extremely important to them, and you feel that they're not being very social, then you have the choice of not being friends with that person. You can't twist somebody and say, "Yeah, but it's important for me to hear about you." Listen, I'm telling you right now, you're not going to hear a whole lot about me. But if you want, you know, I can't insist that you're we're gonna hang out together. You know, you go find another friend then.
But from from the perspective of the friendship.
Yeah, depends who the friends are. Depends what the friendship is, and it depends what you're expecting out of a friendship. If you're expecting out of the friendship, then I'm going to be telling you my deepest, my own personal secrets. So forget it. It's not going
to
be a friendship.
But you need to have a friend like that too.
And maybe I do. Maybe I don't. Maybe I do, maybe I don't. And if you do, so often the friend is your wife. Or often the friend is your spouse. Or often the friend is you may have one friend. Or you may not want a friend. I've been burned so many times by my friends. I don't want to have any friends. I don't want to tell anybody about it. And some people say, well, you got to have at least one friend. No, every time I have at least one friend, that friend burns me. So what good did that do? You know, so everybody's got to decide what's important for them. So that's why you see sometimes people, their kishkas are all over the place. Right? That's why it's a very good expression to learn. Somebody says, are you planning on investing in this, that, or the other? It's in my best interest not to discuss it. That's why you got that mysterious ring to it. Right, yeah, where people kind of respect that expression, because, oh, it's in your best interest. You know, something like, he's probably an FBI agent altogether. You know, there's something very mysterious. There's something very mysterious about that expression, and it works. And it works. You should know, by the way, that I've often used this example. My older brother, always made an impression. We're completely different, but we're exactly the same in outlook, and completely different in personality. And we have the same worldview. Exact same worldview, but with completely different personalities. He was always very, got along with everybody, and I didn't. He was very respectful of everybody, I wasn't. He was never in anybody's face, and I was, right? Everything, our whole approach and personality, completely different. He was always studying, and I was always playing ball, completely different. He was always a guy, everybody liked him, and he was sweet, and there was an impression people had of him, and I myself had an impression of him, as, the guy's a pushover. So I realized he's one of the firmest people I've ever met in my life. No one ever tells him what to do. I didn't realize the later years, his wife probably, no one ever told him what to do. And I couldn't understand. It took me a long time until I was much older to realize the reason I never picked up on it, because he was never involved in confrontation. He almost never involved in confrontations. Because whenever the confrontation would come along, he would just kind of sidestep the confrontation. The guy would say, I think you ought to... And he would always be, he'd always be listening like this and then do what he wanted to do anyway. He never, always. And then once I started paying attention to it, in later years, when I started paying attention, I realized it's happening all the time. It's happening all the time. Anytime anybody thinks he ought to do this, I ought to do that. There are always people in the community to tell you what you ought to be doing, what you ought to... And I realized as I started watching him that it's happening all the time. People are expressing opinions, and he never does what anybody does wants him to do unless he feels like he wants to do it. And the trick isn't there. What is it? The trick was just that he always avoided confrontation. And I was always in confrontation. Always arguing with people. How can you think, I don't think, until I learned I was the gabbai in the shul. Right? Now, in a moment of absolute madness, right, in our community, everybody had to take a rotation. So I decided I want to be the gabbai because for one reason only. I felt that as the gabbai would really give me a chance to work on myself. Because when you're a gabbai, people always got something to complain about, always something to fetch about, and always something, right? So my wife said to me, what are you out of your mind? You haven't got what to do with your time? I said, no, I'll be able to handle it, right? So I started being a gabbai. So the first guy comes over and says, I think it's terrible that the show doesn't have curtains over the windows. I remember a guy said, that is terrible. That is really terrible. And that's all people care about. Hey, the guy doesn't care about the curtains. All he wants to hear about is somebody says to him, you're right. And then not do anything about it. So I was really enjoying that for a few months. The guy comes and says, this is terrible. I realize, you're right. You really should have gotten that. And the guy's happy. He walks out and eventually I noticed that my resolve was starting to break down. And I was starting to kind of get a little irritated with people, and I was starting to argue a little bit, argue back. I remember that the straw that broke the camel's back, I remember a guy telling me something about one of the windows not closing properly, and as the guy was telling me and unloading, I remember looking at the guy and thinking to myself, I'm just listening to a guy like this, I remember thinking to myself, I couldn't care less. Right, I just really couldn't care less. You could take a fly and leap. I could not care less. Right, and at that point I realized if I really don't care, which I didn't at that point, I really didn't care. And that's why I said I can't be a gabbai anymore. So I handed in my resignation. Right? At that point I said I can't be. I just don't care. And when I saw that people are complaining about every little thing, which I thought would be this great character building, but at the point that I saw my character wasn't being built. Right, at that point I said, who needs it? Who really? And a gabbai is supposed to be a gabbai, got a job to be supposed to be. You're meant to be taking all the abuse and helping people out. That's the job of a gabbai. That's why you get power for it. And at the point that I said, I can't do it anymore. That was it. It's a very important rule in life. Number one, talk as little as possible. It is not the learning which is the main thing, but the action. Now, this is one of the most ironic concepts in Torah. Because the Gemara itself says that there was once a discussion in the Beis Medrash, and they took a vote. The Chachamim in the Beis Medrash took a vote. Which is more important, which is more prominent, Torah study or action of mitzvahs? What would you say? Which is more important, Torah study or action? Now, bear in mind, we have a mission that says Talmud Torah Kenegi Kulam. Torah study, right?
Mitzvahs.
Torah. So they were arguing about it in the Beis Medrash until Rabbi Akiva got up and he said, because only Rabbi Akiva could, he said, the Torah study is more important because it leads to the doing of mitzvahs. How's that for some irony? The Torah is more important because it leads to doing the mitzvahs. But that makes it sound like what? It makes it sound like the mitzvahs is more important, isn't it? The ultimate goal is still the mitzvahs. The ultimate goal is still the action, which it is. But the Torah study is more important because it leads to that action. Yeah, but the action is the ultimate goal, so make up your mind. And so we're going to say a bit of a self-contradiction. Now, the answer seems to be, again, I don't know, there are probably other explanations, but the answer seems to be, yes, the action is going to be the ultimate goal. But without Torah study, we're not even going to get to the ultimate goal. We're not even going to get there. And unless there's constant Torah study, that ultimate goal will eventually be lost. And therefore, when the Mishnah over here says, V'lo ha-midrash ha-yikar el ha-masa, it's not the learning that's amazing, it's the action. If you learn with no intent to carry it out into action, that learning is worth very little. On the other hand, sometimes you don't have a chance to put it into action. That could also happen. You learn and you never have the opportunity, but that can happen. It's not your fault. But at the end of the day, the learning is meant to bring you to action. The learning is meant to eventually get to a point where it brings you to action. The cholam marbet varim mevichet. And the more you talk, if you overspeak, it will bring to sin. That means that there are sometimes people in our world have a lot of trouble just sitting silently, sitting in quiet. Right? If you're in a room, it's possibly, I don't know what it's from, but two people sitting together, somebody's got to be jabbering. Somebody's got to talk. Like, again, we're too uncomfortable to just sit there silently. Right? If you talk to somebody and you over-talk, again, ultimately in marriage is where it really comes out. I always use marriage as an example because that's where you're going to spend most of your life. And so you got another principle. In marriage, watch a married couple. If they don't stop at the right moment, eventually somebody says something wrong. I can't believe you said that. I didn't say that. You did. You said I didn't. If you would have just stopped when it was the right thing to do, right? If you would have stopped, everything would be fine. But you kept on going, and eventually you said something, and I said, oh, that's not true. Why do you say everything is not true? And the next thing you know, you're off to the races, right? What should you have done? Just come home from work, speak to your wife for 20 minutes, have dinner with her, have a nice dinner, get up and get out of the house as soon as you can. Go to Marv and go to the Daf Yomi. So instead, a husband comes home, and he sits and they have dinner, then he cheffes his wife in front of a TV, and tells her everything she did wrong in the course of the day, and why the boss doesn't like him. At the end of the day, the wife's got no respect for him either. Now he feels she's got no respect for him, so now he has that big fight. The best thing he can do is do it the way the Torah says to do it. Keep everything limited. It doesn't mean you have to count the words, by the way. It should be very, very natural. But at the end of the day, if a husband and wife spend a lot of time around each other, they are going to end up bickering. That's the way it is. That's the way I appropriated it.
The problem is that, usually the women are the ones that, oh, I did this and that every single day. And the guys usually don't discuss much of details and stuff, you know. And like, a lot of times, they don't take things for. And then comes the day, oh, the wife finds out that you had, I don't know, something for lunch. You didn't tell me that you had that.
How come you didn't tell me? It's like sometimes every once in a while there's something can come up. You have a guest at your house for Shabbos. Right? The guest says, I was in a pizza shop, and I said, yeah, it's a really good pizza shop. And in words, how do you know? So I said, about four weeks ago, I went out for lunch. And there's nothing in the ship. I went for lunch. I said, you didn't tell me. Right, it's like I didn't think it was a state secret. You know what I mean? I didn't think it was. Do you know that there's a medrash? You know something amazing? Oh, you'll appreciate it. And if you're married, you'll appreciate it. There's a medrash that says by Ahasuerus. It says Vashti made a party. Right? Vashti made a party. Gam Vashti a party. Also Mishnei Noshim. So there's a medrash that says that at Vashti's party, she gave them a grand tour of the palace. This is where the king sleeps. This is where he eats. This is where this. There's entertainment. Right? And the Medrash says, we see from here, women need to know all the details. Women need to know all the details, right? Women are very focused on the details. Now, if you want to know something, it's because, of course, Baruch Hu gave them it. It's like anything else, there's a reason for it. Because it's the desire, the incredible curiosity they have, which is what keeps their husbands and children out of trouble. Kid comes home from school. Remember, say, what happened in school today? Nothing. Like usual. What happened today? Did you eat lunch? Yeah. What did you do at recess? Nothing. Right? It was a series of yes and nothings. Right? But what ended up happening, mom says, why there looks like something, what's that thing around your mouth? There's nothing. It's just like, it's like garlic. From what? Nothing. What is that garlic for? Why do you have garlic powder there? Well, you know, Yankee gave me some potato chips after school. Which Yankee? You know, Yankee go, I told you not to play with Yankee. Were those kosher potatoes? You know what I'm saying? It's her prying that it's like as a husband also. You know, husband's got all sorts of ideas, and because the wife gets the details out, eventually she finds out that husband's got these grand plans to take a second mortgage and invest the money or something. And she says, you know, forget about it. You know, they're prying. That's why you also experience often, you go on them, you want to tell your wife something you're excited about. You know, say, oh, you're not going to believe this. I was downtown. Why were we there? Well, listen, let me just tell you. You're coming home to tell you just won $4 million in the lottery. You're not going to believe it. I was downtown. Yeah. And I was, how did you get there? I took a bus. What number? Yeah. And she kind of diverts you with all these absolutely irrelevant details because she's absolutely got an insatiable curiosity. Got an absolutely insatiable curiosity.
Well, like the other, like, when the wife is like, how come I have to get everything out of you? You have to ask you 200 questions to get everything right. Yeah. Just tell me.
Yeah, that's right. I don't even know what you want to know. I just want to eat supper. You should know. Yeah, you got to take it from a pro. You got to take it from a pro. The truth of the matter is like this. All you got to do is just reverse it. All you got to do is reverse it. I mean, as soon as you come home, what happened to work? And nothing much. What happened by you? Oh, nothing. Yeah, did you have a good day? Did anything? And then once you get her going, once the coin drops, then you're free to eat supper. As long as you throw in a periodically go, don't eat garlic, you periodically just pick up and go, ooh, like that. And what you're really thinking about is, y'all, those French fries are pretty good. Yeah, it doesn't matter. As long as you but look interested. Look interested, and then you keep them going. And I'll tell you another thing. That's all I said. It's on tape. It's all in real life. That's what I did. What's that? They know. You gotta at least pay attention with your eyes, you know, even if your mind's a million eyes. I'll tell you another mistake husbands make. This is a classic mistake husbands make, is that you sit down to talk to your wife. Now why are you doing it? Why are you talking to your wife? Talking to my wife because she needs somebody to speak to. I'm trying to do a chesed with my wife and a doctor. So what happens? You get into discussion and you say something when she disagrees with you, and you get all upset that she's disagreeing with you, and what was the whole point today? Is your point to prove you're right? You know, you say something, well, I think Sharon's going to be prime minister. She says, no, I don't think so. Not that, yes, he is, I'm telling you. And you get into the bitch argument, trying to prove you're right. What was the whole point of what you were doing? The whole point of what you're doing is because you want to be right. The whole point of what you're doing is give your wife a little attention. Right? So if you keep, you got to stay focused on what you're trying to accomplish. Right? And that's what often people run into trouble. They forget what it is that they're trying to do. Okay, we'll stop.
I have a question. You say like women are like this little thing that we just have to appease, like they're just kind of there on the side. Like,
not at all. They're not there on the side. They're very much in front of you. They're not there on the side, and you don't have to. But you got to know. When I was engaged, I went to my Rebbe. My Rebbe was talking to me before I got married. Chassidish Rebbe, a little Chassidish Rebbe, sweetest little stereotypical Chassidish Rebbe. He's talking to me how you got to pay attention and try to tell her things that you want. He gave me a whole. So finally, I said to him, you know, and he used to speak in a little squeaky voice like this, you know, with his finger moving. So I said to him, well, it sounds like you got to be a shtickle psychologist. The shtickle means a little bit. It sounds like you got to be a shtickle psychologist. He said to me, more than a shtickle.